Hormone replacement therapy has been prescribed to many women to relieve the symptoms of menopause. Some studies have shown that its health risks outweigh the benefits for some women. But earlier this month, a new study revealed that for others, it can reduce the risk of breast cancer and heart attack. Many women are confused about whether and when to use human hormone replacement therapy and whether it's a good idea. So for today's Please Explain, we have invited to our show Dr. Andrea LaCroix, professor of epidemiology in the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center in Seattle, and Dr. Rowan T. Chlebowski, who is a professor and chief of Harbor UCLA Medical Center's Department of Internal Medicine, Medical Oncology, Hematology. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
I hope I got all of your credentials right. By the way, if listeners have questions, and I'm sure they're going to, you can call us at 646-829-3985, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Rowan, when we use the term hormone replacement therapy, which hormones are we referring to?
Yeah, there's even one step before that. You know, the hormone replacement therapy is commonly used, but after our original report in the Women's Health Initiative, the Federal Drug Administration, the regulatory agency, and the National Institutes of Health stopped using that term because it suggests that there's a deficiency syndrome, that we have a therapy that we know works in it. So we would prefer the term menopausal hormone therapy, though I know HRT or hormone therapy is commonly used. But the drugs we're talking about, the agents, are really estrogens and progestins. At menopause, the estrogen levels go down tremendously as the ovary stops making estrogen. And so the concept was that you would replace that by giving estrogen, but as we develop this, we really haven't figured out exactly how to do that safely and effectively.
Well, replacing lost hormones sounds like a good idea, at least in theory, but what does the estrogen do for somebody who is postmenopausal?
Well, I think the first thing that we really need to talk about is that there's two distinct types of therapy: estrogen alone, which has its own, you know, kind of risk and benefits, and then estrogen plus progestin, where you combine a progestational agent with estrogen. You need the progestational agents if a woman has a uterus, and so those women can only use that combination because estrogen by itself will increase endometrial proliferation, leading towards endometrial cancer in about 30% of women after just 1 year. So the only women who can take estrogen alone are women who had a prior hysterectomy, that is, had their uterus removed. So that's the major distinction as we're discussing these results, which is sometimes hard for you know, lay people to keep straight. So about 30% of women, 25 to 30% of postmenopausal women in the United States have had a hysterectomy, and those women would be candidates for estrogen alone use.
Andrea, for the rest, what symptoms do these hormones treat?
Well, for all women, whether they have a uterus or not, the main symptoms that they treat are hot flashes and night sweats, what we call vasomotor symptoms. They also are very effective for vaginal dryness, which is another reason women used to be prescribed them. The trials that Dr. Chlebowski and I have been working on for over a decade were started because back in the early 1990s, when the Women's Health Initiative was planned and launched, there was compelling evidence that estrogen might be a good drug, not just for the treatment of symptoms, but for prevention in postmenopausal women, and specifically that it might prevent heart disease, hip fracture, and colorectal cancer, among other conditions. We were concerned about possible increased risk of breast cancer at that time, but we couldn't be sure from the observational studies whether that risk was real or not. So these trials were actually not about the treatment of symptoms, although some of the women in the trial did have symptoms and some did not. They were all between the ages of 50 and 79, and they all agreed to take estrogen or placebo for a period of what we thought would be 7 or 8 years in order to find out whether taking estrogen helped to prevent especially heart disease, hip fracture, and colorectal cancer.
When did this become a standard treatment?
Well, it became a standard treatment for symptoms long ago.
When is that? Was that the
60s, 70s? It was invented around the time of World War II, the first estrogens, is my understanding. And they were used in practice in the 60s and 70s until it was discovered that estrogen unopposed without the progestin caused a very huge increase in uterine cancer, and then the use fell off again, and then there was a marketing campaign, in essence, to increase the use of estrogens around the thinking that, you know, that if women wanted to stay young, they needed to keep their ovarian hormones going. And there was a book that came out called Feminine Forever that encouraged women and enticed them with, you know, kind of the appeal of remaining young forever if they kept their ovarian hormones, you know, as if we knew better than our bodies did what sort of hormonal milieu is best for us at different stages of life.
But although there are a lot of women who would love to find a way to get rid of those night sweats, this might be a little too powerful a treatment to take care of those very annoying things?
You can give it at different doses and in different ways. What seems to be clear, though, is that taking estrogen for symptoms, whether you're taking it for symptoms or for some other reason, at least at the standard doses and to some extent probably at the lower doses, this medicine's affecting many different parts of our body. Our disease risks are changing across many different organ systems, even though we might be taking the medicine for symptoms.
I'm talking with Dr. Andrea LaCroix, professor of epidemiology at the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center in Seattle, and Dr. Rowan T. Chlebowski, professor in chief of at Harbor UCLA Medical Center's Department of Internal Medicine. And we're talking about now I'm not allowed to say hormone replacement therapy. What am I saying? Menopausal?
That's fine. You can say that.
HRT. How about me saying HRT? I'll keep it very abstract.
That's
fine.
HT. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Rowan, when did doctors start thinking that hormone replacement might reduce the risk of cancer and heart disease?
Yeah, so it really introduced in practice Premarin, conjugated equine estrogen, the drug that we studied and that's most commonly used in the United States still, was introduced in practice in 1945. So it's, you know, been a therapy for about 60 years. I think a number of observations had led to this consensus in the late 1980s and early 1990s that there might be chronic disease risk reduction benefits, and so I think, and at the time the study started, about 40% of postmenopausal women in the United States were menopausal hormone therapy users. So it really had a wide penetrance, we ran these two trials to see if they were really going to pan out. And I think one of the things we should say is, I mean, I emphasize the difference between the two studies, because the study most recently we reported, the follow-up that Andrea led on the estrogen alone, which had some favorable, you know, benefits, especially for women in their 50s. There was a big difference of women in their 50s versus older women. So there were benefits with that in that group. But for estrogen plus progestin, there's major concerns, because we've reported, interestingly, that a nearly doubling in breast cancer mortality and nearly doubling in lung cancer mortality. And those are really, even though the absolute numbers might be small, those are really very, very bad side effects to accept for taking a therapy that's directed at symptom management, especially since in maybe 90% of the women, the symptoms really abate in, you know, 3 to 5 years. So
do we understand the mechanism by which this helps some women prevent cancer and causes cancer in others?
Yeah, the issues are pretty complicated, because especially when I tell you that estrogen plus progestin increases breast cancer, increases breast cancer mortality, and then we say in our other study for women without a uterus who took estrogen alone, there was a significant decrease in breast cancer. And I think it becomes very challenging, but the actual the body makes adjustments as to whether things are going on in a high estrogen or a low estrogen environment. So estrogen's effects kind of reverse on the tumors, which is really a pretty complex mechanism to get across very easily, you know, kind of to anybody, but perhaps especially to a lay population.
Andrea, how are these hormones related to heart health and the immune system?
Well, let's talk about the heart. And again, for the heart, I want to just emphasize the difference between estrogen plus progestin and estrogen alone. With estrogen progestin, we saw an increase in the risk of heart disease, especially in the first year after women initiated treatment, and that increased risk was there for women regardless of their age. The rates of heart disease are lower among women in their 50s, and they go up, you know, in the 60s, 70s, and 80s and beyond, but there was an increased risk caused by taking estrogen plus progestin, regardless of age. And in the estrogen alone trial, we really saw something quite different. Women in their 50s had a decreased risk of having, for example, an acute MI. They had 12 fewer acute heart attacks per 10,000 women, whereas women in their 70s who were started on estrogen alone had an excess of 16 heart attacks during this longer-term follow-up that we reported on last week, which was almost 11 years of follow-up. And that was with only 6 years of use of hormone therapy on average, the estrogen alone hormone therapy. So for the heart, estrogen plus progestin is not good. Estrogen alone appears to be causing a decreased risk of heart attack in your 50s, but somewhere along the line, in older women, it becomes a harmful medicine and it causes an excess risk.
I'm getting a feeling that
Rowan, I don't know if you have any thoughts on immune function in cancer, or whether that's a possible mechanism, but we really didn't report on anything that's directly related to immune function, so I don't know how to answer that one.
But can I ask, is what you're both saying that it may be effective for one woman but not for the next? Do you have to test it out on somebody to find out?
No, that's not what we're saying.
Yeah, you can't. There's no way of predicting who's going to benefit or who's not going to benefit. I think what we're saying is that there's, for women who have a uterus, estrogen plus progestin seems to be have more harms than benefits, regardless of when you start it. Mm-hmm. And for estrogen alone, for women, the women who can take that are women who had a prior hysterectomy for other reasons. For them, especially if they're starting close to menopause, there are likely benefits for both the heart and both breast cancer, but this is only for short duration use. So I think based on the data we have now, we wouldn't recommend longer durations of use than were evaluated in the trial. And that's not bad because we gave about 5 years of therapy of estrogen alone, for example. And as I said, the vast majority of women's symptoms related to hot flashes and night sweats would go away over that 3 to 5 year period after menopause.
Mary in Manhattan asks, my doctor tells me that I must have hormone replacement therapy as I have quite severe osteoporosis. Does this make sense?
Well, I guess I can start with that one. I mean, there are other treatments for osteoporosis which are just as effective. And when you look at the Federal Drug Administration, you know, package insert labeling for hormones, all estrogens and progestins, they say that other therapies should be carefully considered before using hormones to treat osteoporosis. So that would be the question is, does that woman have explored other therapies that didn't work? That probably would be the only setting where you really would be considering estrogen or hormones for osteoporosis management.
We have to take a little break. When we come back, we'll be taking listener calls at 646-829-3985, or you can continue writing in to our show page at WNYC.org. Many people have been writing in. We will continue this conversation, and it is a complicated conversation, with Drs. Andrea LaCroix and Dr. Rowan Teach Lebowski. Stay with us. We're back with Drs. Andrea LaCroix and Dr. Rowan Teach Lebowski talking about hormone replacement therapy on today's Please Explain. And you can give us a call at 646-829-3985. That's 646-829-3985. We have a lot of people writing in. A listener left this question on our show page. Why is it that bioidenticals are considered to be more natural than horse estrogen? I'm on estradiol, is it? which is considered a bioidentical synthesized from plants, but I have heard of other bioidenticals that are mixed by special pharmacies. What's the difference? Bioidenticals, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I could start with that, I guess, is that bioidentical hormones, it's kind of a catchphrase. I mean, they're hormones that are found in the human body. And you're right, is that conjugated equine estrogen are also natural products. The major question is if they're being proposed as being safer, but the evidence that they're any safer for any of these parameters in terms of the heart or the cancer is really lacking. I think the Federal Drug Administration again has recently come out against some of the claims that have been made for bioidentical kind of hormones. So I think you have to look and see there really is no different safety issues defined yet for these different products. Now, one thing that's got a lot of attention is micronized progesterone or progesterone, and that might have a little less breast cancer risk, but it looks like it doesn't prevent very much the endometrial cancer risk, so you're just probably swapping out the risk. So I think if people are considering bioidentical hormones, they should really ask for the definitive evidence that they are safer, and in my view, there really isn't such evidence available at this time.
Stephanie in New York City would like you to talk about how they manufacture the hormones. She's concerned about the abuse of horses, mares, and foals to produce estrogen. Andrea?
I don't have much to say about that.
Yeah, I think this is Chbosky again. That is a concern. I mean, I think the idea is that conjugated equine estrogen is made from pregnant mares' urine, so that you really need a number of horses that are pregnant all the time. There's been questions. These farms are largely in Canada. There's some of these issues have been examined, and I'm not knowledgeable right now what the status of conditions of the horses and things, but I know that that's been an issue, and just the concept of keeping these horses pregnant continuously and relatively confined has been an issue and is a concern for some consumers.
Carol in Manhattan says my mother was given Premarin, following a hysterectomy in the 1980s. She had 3 biopsies for benign lumps in her breasts in the years that followed, and her mood was extreme and erratic throughout my childhood. And another listener asked, can your guest speak to early surgical menopause and the risk of dementia later in life and how HRT might affect that?
I can say a few things about that. One general theme is women who have early surgical menopause and have their ovaries taken out are really having ovarian deficiency much earlier than they would have if they had natural menopause, which is around the age of 51 on average. Many of them get put on hormone therapy and are considered to need it at those young ages, at least through the time of natural menopause. And so some of them, if you have a hysterectomy with your ovaries out in your 30s, you could already have 20 years of estrogen use by the time you hit the time of the natural menopause. Our findings in these trials really pertain to women. They may have used hormones in the past, but they stopped using the hormones before they entered the trial, and then they were randomly assigned to use them or not. And as Dr. Chbosky has said, we're really studying on average 6 years of use. In some of our reports, we look within groups of women who've used hormones in the past for various amounts of time to see if they importantly affect the results. Our results for dementia and Alzheimer's disease in the Women's Health Initiative trials have shown an increased risk of dementia and AD associated with hormone therapy use in the trial, and I don't believe that that's conditioned on the amount of past use. But there is a hypothesis out there that that it would be better for your brain if you started using estrogens around the time of menopause and just kept using them forever. There's very weak evidence from observational studies to support it. Our trial doesn't support a beneficial effect of taking hormone therapy when it started in older ages, and we're actually doing a study now to look at the brain function of women who started taking the estrogen in the trial in their 50s, which is around the time of menopause, to see what we find there. But overall, the studies that have been done on cognitive function, Alzheimer's disease, and the actual brain size, they've done a study of brain MRI, have shown detrimental effects of taking estrogen, whether it's estrogen alone or estrogen plus progestin, on the brain. It actually makes women's brains smaller, and it's associated with an increased risk of mild cognitive impairment and Alzheimer's disease dementia.
Let's take some calls. Kim, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I am actually a person who has been diagnosed with fibroids and actually estrogen-dominant fibroids. And I've had healthcare professionals want to give me a hysterectomy, which I've refused to do. And I was wondering if you have tested the amounts of estrogen in menopausal women that actually come from food and healthcare products. I know that I started my menopause around age 45 with profound symptoms of menopause, and as soon as I stopped using healthcare products, meaning slathering lotions all over my body and eating foods that were very high in estrogen, meaning soy, the symptoms completely disappeared.
Okay, doctors?
Yeah, we didn't, test for estrogen levels in broadly across all our patient population. The caller is correct, is that, perhaps especially like in children, that becomes an issue in terms of cosmetics containing estrogen-like compounds. Can't comment about her particular kind of situation. I think the other question that she brings up, which again is a little outside of what we study in the Women's Health Initiative, is about 30% of women in the United States, or postmenopausal women, are having a hysterectomy one common indication is fibroids, or these benign tumors, which can cause pain and bleeding problems. There are other alternatives for treatment there that might be considered besides hysterectomy, so perhaps the caller could chat with her, gynecologist about are there other treatment options, and some of them involve in terms of radiotherapy ablation a part of the area. So a radiation oncologist, interventional radiologist also might be consulted.
Now, Kim also mentioned soy, and some women see soy as a natural remedy. Is it effective?
Right, for some, it's been tested. As a natural, as a natural way to take estrogen and maybe ease hot flashes that way. The studies have been showing not much help from taking soy. So we did a trial, not this Women's Health Initiative trial, but another trial where we looked at soy diet as well as multi-botanical herbs and that had soy components, and neither of those reduced the hot flashes.
And isn't soy a real problem for any woman who's had cancer?
That, I think, is not true. Dr. Chbosky, what do you think of that?
Yeah, I think, I wouldn't take large amounts of it. I mean, I think the concept of people taking it is they say it will not have the bad effects of estrogen, on the breast cancer recurrence, but we don't know whether soy, it has never really been tested in definitive fashion to see whether it's safe. So that would seem like you're really taking a chance if you're taking large amounts of soy. Now, just regular amounts of soy in the diet, as opposed to taking these large amounts of supplement targeting symptoms, probably not a good idea for a patient with breast cancer. I'm a medical oncologist, so I'm very sensitive to that issue because, of course, recurrence then becomes a fatal disease that you can't get rid of completely.
Let's take another call. Bonnie from Dobbs Ferry. Hi, Bonnie. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. My question is, the studies that were done, was the estrogen or progesterone given orally, or have there been studies done where it was administered topically through a patch, or I have a friend that's taking a compounded cream. In both cases, the friends of mine that are taking both estrogen and progesterone topically through the patch or the cream, and they both seem to be doing really great. So the question is that accurate?
Well, it's accurate that you can... Yeah, go ahead.
You know, in the Women's Health Initiative, we gave pills, so oral medication only. There are other alternatives, as you mentioned, kind of you know, the patch and creams. The person that you said is doing fine, that would be reflect your symptoms. But of course, the long-term safety of those approaches compared to oral pills just hasn't been tested. And once again, the regulatory agency, the federal government, looking at this, gives the same label indications that they gave to the pills that we tested in the trial. So they give the same black box warning for heart disease, for combined hormone therapy. To the skin preparations as well. So they may work better for symptom management in some patients, but again, there isn't long-term safety data that those are any safer than the medications we evaluated in the Women's Health Initiative.
A listener asks about the effect of hormone therapy on libido. Has any study been done?
It helps with vaginal atrophy, so for some women it makes... Mm-hmm. It makes sexual function better, and all aspects of sexual function. So that's a possibility. As far as actually stimulating libido, there are other drugs like testosterone that are being tested for that. All of them have their own risks and benefits.
One listener says, why are we even messing with Mother Nature?
Good question.
Well, I think that's an interesting question, and when we look at country-to-country differences in menopausal hormone therapy use in the United States, it used to be 40% and went down to about 20% right at the year after we reported in 2002 the Women's Health Initiative estrogen plus progestin findings. And, of course, there was an associated, which we've kind of linked in a number of ways, to about 15 to 20,000 fewer breast cancers per year subsequently seen. But the interesting part is in a country like Spain, where you have the same kind of European background, the use of menopausal hormone therapy is only even 5% of the population. So it really is interesting. So we used to have 40%. Now we have 20%. Spain has 5%. The women are, in the same gene pool, are experiencing the same symptoms. So there is a difference in perception, or are there other external factors that are driving use? And so should we be more like Spain? I mean, that would solve a lot of the problems if we had 5% using it. Then there'd be a lot less discussion, because there wouldn't be. So it's interesting to what that difference in usage country to country might be.
Emma from Brooklyn, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, well, I just had a question. My mother went through menopause very early and had a hard time of it. And when I say early, I say she was started at 38, completely done by 41. And I'm sort of wondering what the options are, first of all, if there's any likelihood that the same will happen to me because of genetics, and also sort of what the recommendations are for women who have so many extra years of sort of a rough time with the symptoms.
Yeah, to me, not Chabowski again, it's not really known what the linkage between, kind of genetics in terms of, onset of menopause. There really aren't. It's a relatively small subset of women that have persistent symptoms, and I think some of those women, again, if they're limiting symptoms, don't have any very reasonable options other than using a hormone therapy to treat their symptoms. And so it's kind of, in a certain sense, it's back in reluctant use. But there really are no effective options for women whose limiting symptoms persist for multiple years.
A listener writes in, as a 72-year-old woman who had a hysterectomy in 1985 and has taken estrogen for 26 years and has seen no negative effects, should she worry? Should she stop taking it now that she's getting older?
I think that was one of the most common questions that got asked over the past week. Our data don't directly address longer durations of use. But a woman who's used it for 26 years, did she say how old she was now?
She said 72 now.
She's 72 now, so she's in the age group where there was an excess risk of heart attacks, there was an excess risk of death, and an excess risk of overall chronic conditions among women who started using the hormone therapy in their 70s. What we don't know for sure is there's a hypothesis that if you start using it around the time of menopause and keep using it, you don't experience the same adverse effects as if you start using it in your 70s.
We have pretty much run out of time, but should we all agree that a lot more work has to be done, a lot more study has to be done?
Absolutely, and I think women should really make this careful distinction between estrogen plus progestin and estrogen alone, and whether or not they've had a hysterectomy as they're thinking about these issues and discussing them with their physicians.
As well as their age.
Thank you both so much for being with us. Dr. Andrea LaCroix, Professor of Epidemiology at the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center in Seattle, and Dr. Rowan T. Chlebowski, Professor and Chief of Harbor-UCLA Medical Center's Department of Internal Medicine, Medical Oncology, Hematology. Thank you so much.
Thank you.